Hey everybody, this is Justin Case. Welcome to episode 65.
I've got my brother Jason Case on here, and we're going to go ahead and talk about some toys that we had when we were kids, and some other comic books, movies, action figures, any of that. That's kind of what we're going to focus on tonight, and I'm really excited to do this. I haven't been on a show with you, Jason, on any medium probably since 2015. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's probably been about that long, I'd say. Which is, what's that? That's 6 years ago, at least.
Right.
Does it seem like it's that long ago, but I suppose it is.
Yeah, time flies. Definitely so. Real quickly, I didn't ever get your take. I never asked you either, you know, off the show or anything about the Loki. Did you watch the Loki series yet?
You know, it's funny you said that. Donnie was over tonight, and we watched it out on the deck, the first episode.
That's awesome.
Did you see that? Did you see that yet?
Yes, the first episode, yeah.
Really good, right?
I liked it.
I thought it was very cool. How everything was 70s technology.
I told Crystal that. My wife told that. I go, look at that monitor. It's all rounded. And I go, this looks like the DMV when my brother and I were kids. Everybody smoked in the buildings. Everything had, it smelled like cigarette smoke and ash.
Well, I said to Donnie tonight, I go, oh my God, it looks like the state office building in Watertown.
Yeah. It probably still looks that way.
It does. It's all brown and tans and mustard colors.
It's very depressing.
Hey, it's very hip if it's 1974.
Right?
Cutting edge.
They've had the same fish swimming around that column.
they still have that pond in the lobby there.
I would hope so.
Because in a normal year, the girls would always have their dance recital there. And they'd always, when Hadley was little, before she could do it, we'd have to take her down to see the fish to keep her distracted.
Those are pretty fat fish, too. They're pretty big around.
Yeah, they're really good size. There's some turtles in the pond there, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Big size. Big turtles.
Yeah. I remember, like, we would go to all kinds of stuff there. Oh, man. I couldn't even count all the stuff that we went to for that. I mean, they had, like, which I never went to, which you went to a couple times, was the Lego, Craig Systems Lego contest or whatever, kids would go in there and build all that.
Now, I went there once, just one time. I think Mom promised she'd take me, and it was supposed to be, like, during the day, and she, I don't know if she had to work or something, and she took me. After it was almost like after hours, after it was done, we went in and there was nobody there, but all the displays were still set up.
Well, and you convinced her to get you a Lego set, and then by you doing that, you got me one as well.
You don't happen to remember what they were?
Yeah, I remember one was you got me an airplane, and it was blue and white, and it had real rubber wheels, and they weren't cheesy looking wheels either like they do now, but these were ridiculously realistic, like, what'd you call those planes? Those little Cessnas or whatever? It looked like one of those sandpiper planes or whatever they call them from like the 70s.
Okay. I totally remember going, but I don't remember what Lego set I got.
Vaguely remember. I think you got that space set that was yellow and black, and it had that diamond on the front end of that spaceship.
Was that big spaceship? And then the guy, the minifig that came with it, had like a totally black helmet and visor?
I believe so, yeah. Because I remember a couple of the funny stories I remember you telling me when you came back was, you said, there was these kids going around on the table smashing the sets when nobody was looking.
Oh, yeah, they were. They were like, they were walking around, these two kids. They were probably a few years older than us, like probably 12 or 13, somewhere in that range. And they're just walking around. There's these displays that these kids worked on, and some of them were pretty elaborate, and they were just smashing the Lego sets.
Yeah, and
And there was nobody, like the only people there, because it was all set up in the lobby, the state office building. Yeah. The only people there were me and Mom, and that was it.
Oh, wow.
And then these two kids come walking in, yeah.
That's pretty weird, though, kind of surreal, because it's like, I remember you said there was a kid that, he did an Airwolf, his version of Airwolf, and I was so mad,
yeah.
So I wanted to see it.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, I do remember
was
that.
Was it like, it was it big?
It wasn't colored. No, it wasn't colored like Airwolf. It was blue and white, I believe. But yeah, it was definitely whatever that Airwolf helicopter is.
The Bell 222 had that jet helicopter look. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, because I remember, I think you, I seem to remember maybe you went to that twice, two different times, but maybe not. Maybe it was just that once, but.
No, it was just one time.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, because you brought, you got me a set, and I loved it because it was an airplane, so I thought it was pretty neat. Of course, I was thankful to get any Lego set when I was a kid, you know? I mean, because it was.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
probably adjusted for inflation. They, were probably still super expensive back then, like they are now.
Yeah. Yeah, my kids don't really, they're not really into Legos as much as they were. They're doing a lot of, like, my son, he's got the Masters of the Universe Origins. He loves that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's his kick right now. And then my daughter's kick right now is Looney Tunes plush characters for some reason. So,
you know, Hadley's into the stuffed animal stuff too now.
Yeah, it's odd. But it's like Marvin the Martian and Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, they're all about that right now.
Does she watch a lot of those Looney Tunes cartoons?
Yeah, yeah, they both do right now. They're on some kick. And I was like, wow, I forgot how funny these were. You see, I always liked it when the Wile E. Coyote went off the edge and he stopped for a minute and froze in the air before he fell.
Yeah.
It is great.
Yeah, she likes the stuffed animals, but she's got a bunch of those Lego friends.
Yeah, those are generally cheaper than the traditional boy-focused sets because they tend to have a lot more smaller pieces and probably more engineering involved. I mean, because like those girl sets, the friend sets are like, they're not necessarily simpler, like more simple in appearance, but they're more straightforward, like you're going to build a house. It's got a fence,
yeah,
and flowers and stuff, and flower boxes.
Yeah, she's got, like houses and amusement parks and all kinds of different ones.
Oh, that's cool. The last thing...
Yeah, she's got a lot of Lego Batman ones, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the last Lego stuff my kids got was the Mario Brothers Lego sets.
I saw those. Those are pretty neat looking.
Yeah, like Bowser's Castle. I think they have all the big ones. And then it's actually... Man, I tell you, I remember seeing him play those, and I'm like, man, that would be awesome if we were, like, when we were kids and they had that, we'd be all over that thing. Because you can
move
the Mario when it does all the sounds from the video game. So you actually take the Mario figure and jump from point to point, and it, you know, it counts the coins, and you get a one-up or whatever when you do certain things, and you can totally arrange the sets how you want to, like, customize it. But that Mario is kind of freaky because his eyes are electronic, so when he's not on, he just has black eyes. It kind of freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's different, but at any rate, yeah, that Loki show was pretty nice. I you know what kind of was kind of strange? Like, there was points of it that I didn't quite understand. Like, there's that kid that's in that, like, kind of like that stained glass chapel thing.
And, oh, okay.
And then there's like this devilish looking thing in the stained glass. So I'm like, what the heck is that supposed to be about?
Okay, so I asked Donnie, I go, hey, is that supposed to be Mephisto?
Right.
Because
it's the only thing I can think of.
Because I know, like, tying into this whole comic book speculator market stuff, Silver Surfer 4 was a real big book because Mephisto's on the cover. And that was driving values. And I don't know if people were thinking he was going to be the one who was behind everything in WandaVision. I think that was kind of what they were guessing. But now I'm wondering if he's going to be the one who's behind everything in Loki. I don't know.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing is that whole temporal... What is the name of it, Jason? What's the acronym for that corporation?
Is it TVA?
TVA, Temporal Variance Agency or something, I don't know, something like that. And so I looked it up because I had no idea what it was. That you had to read the Thor books to know what the organization was. That was the first appearance.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's why I never heard of it, because I never read the Thor stuff. You know what I mean? And nobody did. I mean, I couldn't name a single kid I knew that read that stuff.
No, that was like, what, Walt Simonson? Well, no, that was probably earlier with us, Walt Simonson. But who wrote Thor when we were kids? Like, wasn't Thor all, like, Thunderstrike and stuff at that point?
No, that was 90s. Because we were in, we were in just before all that. So if you go back to like probably 1989, 1990, it wasn't technically Thunderstrike yet, but we were close.
That would have been Walt Simonson. Was that Walt Simonson?
I believe it was. That's a, I, you know, because I have a bunch of those older comics upstairs in the vault, if you will, and it's, that's what I think. Because remember, the art was very, his art kind of reminded me of Sal Buscema Sr.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's real jagged, and I didn't like the art when I was a kid. Like I've said a few times before on this show, is that I liked his art now. I like it now because it really portrays the emotions of the characters. But at the time, I hated it because I was into Mark Bagley stuff, and I didn't even like Todd McFarlane. I liked Mark Bagley, Eric Larson.
Yep, Eric Larson. So you went from McFarlane to Eric Larson had a run, and then once Eric Larson was done, that's when Mark Bagley took over.
Right, and Eric Larson had started out the just straight Spider-Man title, which, like, I think by...
No, you've got it reversed. He started on Amazing Spider-Man because Todd left to do the straight Amazing Spider-Man title.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see,
That's why Eric Larson took over. And Eric Larson's actually the one who made Venom kind of the big teeth, drooling right. kind of Venom. Before, when Todd drew him, he wasn't like that.
He was much more subdued, and I think he had, like, those nostrils. He mm-hmm. just had the flat-looking face, because that was, man, the other thing I didn't like about Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man stuff is everyone had that slanted face, like a shovel face thing going on.
You know, he drew, and that was one thing about McFarlane, he draws really, like, a really great Spider-Man, but I like the faces on the characters.
They're all slanted inward.
Yeah.
It's like a Frito or something. And even when he went into Spawn, they looked the same way.
I mean, I probably would prefer, I think I'd prefer Eric Larson over Todd McFarlane on Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. But the thing is, a guy I also really liked was Alex Saviuk, the guy that did Web of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah, he did good stuff.
I liked a lot of the sub, like those really kind of like C-list villains, like Ruby Tuesday. And
oh my God.
There was that guy that was made out of flies.
I don't think anybody's ever said that. Oh my God.
He was full of ants or something, and he was like this fat guy. And it was an army of ants.
I don't even know who Ruby Tuesday is.
What's that?
I said I don't even know who Ruby Tuesday is.
She's got like this really, she's got a really attractive body from the neck down, but from the neck up, her head is a giant ruby.
Oh my God.
With no face on it at all. It's just a rounded off ruby. So whenever someone mentioned Ruby Tuesday's a restaurant, I went right to the series of comic book. So yeah, but his art was great. I really liked it a lot. And trying to think, because there was like the, I liked all of the annuals that they did. And they'd have the C-list characters in the back, like the Prowler, and they'd have...
Wouldn't they also have the C-list creative teams on them?
Yes, like the art wasn't as good, and...
it wasn't up to snuff.
No, they're like, hey, we're going to give you a shot, but you're going to be in the back of this thing, you know, and if you're good enough, maybe we'll give you another, make a main, or like a somewhat main limited series or something. And so, like some of the other stuff was, like, I liked how Web of Spider-Man had their exclusive characters that were in there all the time, like the Rose. Remember that guy, the Rose?
Yeah, I know the Rose.
He's awesome. And then I'm trying to remember...
Wasn't the Rose... he didn't end up being Richard Fisk, did he?
No.
Who was the Rose?
I've never seen him unmasked in my life. Never.
Why was I thinking he was Richard Fisk? Did they team up or something?
You mean talking about Kingpin?
No, that's Wilson Fisk.
Right, but so was Richard Fisk his son or something?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, because there was that one guy that he always had that Wayne Newton haircut or that dark hair, and he never wore a mask or anything, but he was like a hitman or something. What was that guy's name? I don't remember. He was always...
Who, Hammerhead?
No. No. Not Hammerhead. This guy just looked... He looked normal. He looked like a normal kind of tough hitman kind of guy. And I don't remember his name. And, oh, man, now it's killing me. I thought it began with an N, but I'm not sure. I don't want my phone to tick too much if I look it up. But anyway, his name wasn't like, it wasn't anything like that. But at any rate, he was always there, like, especially during Maximum Carnage. He was in some of those, just staying in Web of Spider-Man. The same was also true for a lot of the characters in Spectacular Spider-Man. Like, they had the Molten Man on there. Remember him?
Yeah.
He stayed specifically in Spectacular Spider-Man. Mostly the same could be said about the Vulture and a.k.a. Adrian Toomes and Shriek. There is this lady called Shriek in it.
I remember Shriek. Shriek's still in the comics.
Yeah, and then Domino was in there too, but I don't think she was in any of the Spider-Man stuff. But anyway, I used to get those two confused.
Anyways, the Rose was Richard Fisk.
It was Richard Fisk? Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I thought it was. No, Shriek was just in I can't remember something. It was some Carnage crossover that just came out within the last year or so.
Oh, okay.
I want to call it Maximum Carnage, but I know it's not that. It crossed over into a bunch of books. I read it on the Marvel U app. I didn't buy any of them, but I did go back and reread it on the Marvel U app.
Right.
Because all that stuff is written by Donny Cates there. And he's kind of like the big, hot, new Marvel writer.
Oh, okay. Well, do you remember when we would hide comic books? And we went, there was a store that went through a couple iterations in title, but the first one, mm-hmm. it was Nichols. It's called Nichols, but I mm-hmm. don't know that we were looking into comic books when Nichols, I think once it became, no, I'm sorry, it was Phase Drugs, and then it became Eckerd's afterwards, which are both defunct, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
So I remember one comic that I hid was that What If Spider-Man, what if Spider-Man retained his Captain Universe powers?
Yep, I remember that one.
And
now Phase had that spinner rack.
Yes, right near the drug counter. It was near the pharmacy.
See, now what I remember is that spinner rack being up front by the magazines, because I bought, maybe they had multiple ones. I'll never forget that Phase. I bought the first part of Nightfall there, just Batman 492, and I also bought over towards the liquor store side of it. I don't think it was in the liquor store. I think it was the register, as you could leave and go towards the liquor store part of the store. Mm-hmm. I bought Superman Volume 2, Number 1. You know that one, right?
Which one was it again?
Superman Number 1, John Byrne.
Oh, yeah, because that's the one where Metallo's on the cover.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I bought that at Phase 2. Both those books at Phase.
Nice.
And, Nightfall Part 1, I totally remember getting that off the spinner rack.
Yeah, because I was trying to think. I remember one villain that really sucked that was in Web of Spider-Man. Silvermane. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that guy was terrible. He didn't have any teeth. Like, totally, totally toothless.
Yeah, a lot of those Spider-Man books that weren't the main Spider-Man title had not very good villains in them, I'll say. Like, they'd have Vermin.
Oh, Vermin, I forgot all about him.
Yeah. Wasn't there a big Vermin, like, storyline in Spectacular Spider-Man? Didn't it go multiple issues?
In the 80s it did, like, probably in its first year of its first
I'm thinking of the 90s one. I'm pretty sure it was in the 90s, because the 80s Spectacular Spider-Man, I mean, it started, I think in, oh, geez, that must have been, oh, you know what I was thinking of? I was thinking of Web of Spider-Man. That started in the 80s. Spectacular Spider-Man did start in the 70s, because it was always Spider-Man and teaming up with someone else.
Right. Yeah, and it's, I don't know. I did like a lot of, like, the B-list people. I don't know why. I've always been drawn to those kind of
people. Like Puma?
No. We'll have to pass on that. But, like, Tombstone was cool.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, a ripoff of... he's not really... Nah, I'm not going to finish that statement. But he was interesting because he was a C-list villain that would go around to, like, different comics. Like, he was in the Nighthawk comics. There was a small...
Oh, you mean Darkhawk?
Yeah, Darkhawk. Yeah, Darkhawk. And he was in the Darkhawk comic books for a small arc Foreigner, that's the guy I was thinking of, Jason. That assassin, his name was Foreigner. He was exclusive to, like, the Web of Spider-Man stock. Former husband of Silver Sable. There's another name drop.
Now, do you remember, I read it not that long ago. It was in Spectacular Spider-Man. It was The Death of Jean DeWolf. It was a four-part four-part crossover.
What era was that? Like, what was it, 90s?
No, that was 80s. It was the villain was called the Sin Eater, and he was killing people. And one of the people he killed was Jean DeWolf, who was a police officer who was a friend of Peter Parker.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty good. If you get a chance, you should go read that.
Yeah, I wish these comic books themselves weren't so far out. Originally, the grading system has destroyed toys and comic books and sports cards.
Oh my gosh. Well, everything. And
yeah,
we've talked about it before about how just in the last year and a half, how out of control it's gotten.
It's destroyed the hobby for fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for people that are investing money and pumping big chunks of cash into it. But
the fans suffer.
Some of these books that were actually, if you were a guy who had a decent paying job and they were expensive and you could actually attain some of these books, and some of them are just becoming like out of people's leagues. And then what's happening is, well, I can't get a Hulk 181, so I'll get a giant size X-Men. And then the price of giant size X-Men goes way up. And then people say, well, I can't get a giant size X-Men anymore, so I'm going to get a Hulk or a X-Men 94. And then the price of that goes way up. And like, it's just a trickle down thing where they're just looking at, okay, I can't get their first appearance, so now I'm going to start buying their second appearance. And then the second appearance goes way up. And it's everything. And the problem is, too, all people want to buy are key issues.
Right.
Or things they perceive as key issues. Or
right.
Something might have a million copy print run, but that doesn't matter at this point because it's going to be a key issue. I saw a YouTube video of a guy who bought at a comic swap or a con or something like that. He bought like seven raw Uncanny X-Men 282s, which is the first Bishop. And he's going, you know, he bought them for $5 a piece or whatever. And he's going to press them and he's going to send them out to CGC. And, you know, he said they're all going to be 9.8s and he's going to turn around and sell them for X number of times what he paid for them. And then, like, that's the stuff that's like really, I mean, I guess it's cool because if you can do that and you want to take the time and effort to do that, you're funding the hobby by sending these comics out to pay for, you know, whatever else you want to buy. I guess it's smart, but man, it's just,
nobody's got to pop at some point, Jason.
Well, I mean, I think like obviously your golden age comics, your silver age books, and probably your bronze age books, the value is more than likely going to hold. Some of this modern age stuff, like anything from after, you know, say the copper age to current, like, it's just unreal. There's modern books that have been out for 2 or 3 years that are hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, you and I would talk about that, especially last year when I was buying those super-size issues from Walmart and at my comic store before I quit buying comic books. And yeah, you were talking about, like, wow, if you get this Venom, this Venom comic that's in this variety pack at Walmart, pick it up because it's a hot book right now. And it's that kind of stuff that it's like, wow, I had no idea. And I mean, the thing is for me personally, my haven was always toys. And now pretty much that haven's been burned to the ground. Save for
I think a lot of things have been mirrored in both, in any kind of collectible, really.
Yeah,
whether it's your toys,
right,
or it's your cards or it's your comic books, anything that's collectible is not super duper fun to collect.
No, it's not. If anything, it's become stressful because as a fan,
it's a lot of work to get things.
Yeah, and it gets to the point where you're like, you know what, I don't want to work on it anymore. This shouldn't be work. It's supposed to be fun, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not saying like everything needs to be super overproduced and stuff, but I mean, I think it's kind of dumb that, you know, you go to get a comic and a week before the comic's release, the final order cutoff has been, you know, oh, there's going to be some new character in this book.
Yeah.
Well, then somebody that doesn't even read the book, oh, well, geez, the comic shop's got five copies, I'm buying all five. Well, the guy who's been reading the series, if he doesn't necessarily have it on his pull, but he's been grabbing it every time it comes out, you know, you're missing out. So then you've got a hole in your run.
Yeah.
And I'm a big run guy. I like having runs of things.
Well, yeah.
I'd rather have a run of books than that's the way I like things.
Yeah, because you follow the story. You want to read the story and have a complete saga, right?
Yeah.
And but that's the thing. Maybe it's a segue sidebar, but it's a perfect one, is how you and I have talked about pre-orders. And pre-orders are really a sore spot with me these days. And I started noticing it with comic books. Mm-hmm. If you have a pull list, their job mm-hmm. is to pull it for you because you're a loyal customer. You're giving them guaranteed mm-hmm. business, you know, and they'll add stuff to your list and you can say, no, I don't want that or whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it kind of reminds you like Seinfeld where it's like the important part of the reservation is the holding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I would have the comic shop I was with up until February of 2020. I don't have any comic shop now, but they would miss issues on me. And I got that app, you know, that you turned me on to, and I was like, they missed an issue here. Because I would always just get the basic covers, like the newsstand covers, if you standard cover.
Yeah.
I never liked the alternate covers, because I always I always felt like the main cover had a cooler, more attractive picture on it. And I might be alone in that, but that's my thing, right? And they would miss those. But then I'd find five or six different titles I didn't reserve, didn't tell them I wanted, in my pull box.
Yeah. And I think, like, it sounds like where you were going, you might have had a bad comic shop.
Yeah, they did.
And you hear stories of other people who just can't say enough good things about their comic shop, that they never miss issues for them on their pull list. If a book does come across that they think that the customer might like, they will pull that for them, even if it's some super speculator hot book that week. And it's kind of the same thing with the toys. Comics are a little bit different because if you pre-order a book, you're going to get the book more than likely. Okay. Toys, I know, like, Target does pre-orders, Walmart does pre-orders, and half the time they get canceled. But comic books, they're based on copies ordered is how many copies are printed.
Right.
So, you know, your final order cutoff, you know, is whatever time period before the book is released, DC or Marvel's going to print whatever the retailers order.
Right.
Where people get in trouble, I shouldn't say get in trouble, but where the shortage happens is if it's a book that, you know, hasn't been really doing all that well or nobody's buying, and then hey, there's going to be this new character. And like, here's a good example. So there was a Year of the Villain 4-issue miniseries. I think it was last year. And it was, you know, the Batman Who Laughs was in it and everything. It was only a 4-issue thing. Nobody was buying it. I was buying it. It was on my pull list. I was the only one buying it at my shop. So issue 1 comes out, nobody buys it. Issue 2 comes out, nobody in the country buys it. Well, issue 3 gets announced. Hey, the new character, Joker's sidekick, Punchline, is going to be in this issue.
Huh.
Well, of course, you don't know that in pre-orders. It gets leaked a week or two before the issue comes out. So all of a sudden, the shop that I'm going to, I have it because he pulled it for me. But he's getting 20 phone calls that day. Hey, do you have Hellraiser number 3? Hey, do you have Hellraiser number 3? Because, oh, it's a new character. That's where the problem lies. And it's all just speculators trying to jump on things so they can buy that book for $4. And then the impatient people that are like, oh my gosh, I didn't have that book on my pull list and it's going to be worth a lot of money. So I'll buy it for $50 the day it comes out. And then that person will go and buy that book off eBay for $50. Or there's shops that'll mark the books up. This is an example of a bad shop practice. They know that book's a hot book. They take that book, and even if you've got it pulled, they're going to mark it up to whatever the going rate is that day for it, which is really, really bad and, like, terrible customer service. But and chances are that book, if you wait a month or two, it's going to come right back down to earth, and you'll be able to get it. Sometimes it doesn't, and people miss out. But, yeah, that's an example. So pre-orders with the comics, they're printed to order. I think with the toys, and we've both had our pre-orders canceled, that's why it's hard for me to understand why if you do pre-order a toy through Target or Walmart or any site, and then, okay, the release date's coming up, and it's 2 days before the release date, and they cancel your pre-order, or they cancel your pre-order the day of the release. Okay, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, you have X number of pre-orders. You should be producing at least that many toys to fulfill pre-orders.
Right, because people actually put an order in.
Right, and then on top of that, you need to produce enough to put in your stores. And I know it's not going to be like 1989 where the pegs are filled from front to back because retailers don't want to take a markdown on things. They don't want to take a loss on anything. They want to be as profitable as possible and keep turns up. But, man, like, the action figures are so sparsely produced.
Yep. Yep, 4 figures and per case for the wrestling stuff.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of money that's left on the table. Obviously, kids don't play with action figures the way we did. There's so many other things they can do. I mean, and I don't blame kids. If I was a kid nowadays, hey, you can have this iPad with every game in the world on it, or you can have, like, you know, some action figures, right?
Yeah.
Probably going to pick the iPad is what most kids are going to do. I mean, I can't blame them. But I still think that there is a lot of kids that would play with figs if they were readily available.
To get stuff for, like, my son, I got him pretty much all of the available wrestling figures for the WWE Masters, right? And all of the Origins that I could for that point in time. And he loves them. But I had to go to 3 different states and probably 12 different Walmarts to get them.
Yeah, well, think about this. So let's go back to, you know, Masters of the Universe when we were kids, okay? Mm-hmm. Do you want to go to the store? Okay, I want a He-Man, okay? And, oh, next time I go to the store, I hope I get another figure. And you go in, and there's He-Man and nobody else. And then the next time you go in, 2 weeks later, oh, there's still one He-Man. Like, is the kid going to keep wanting to buy those toys? No, it's so dumb that there's not any toys on the pegs anymore.
Right.
Like, Transformers. Oh, I've got Ultra Magnus. Oh, man, I hope they have another new Transformer. Like, I hope they have the new Galvatron from Transformers the movie. And you go in as a kid, and there's no Galvatron. There's no Wreck-Gar, there's no whoever from the new movie, but they might have 3 Ultra Magnuses sitting there.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in those type of terms. And we weren't big Joe kids, but imagine going in and, okay, I got Cobra Commander, but I need some Joes to battle him. And, wow, they've had the same beachhead for 4 weeks. They've got a peg full of beachhead. Where's Hawk? Where's Duke? Where's Roadblock? Well, I guess it's Beachhead versus Buckethead Cobra Commander there.
Buckethead. Maybe I can make these Kenner Swamp Thing figures work.
Oh my God! You know, if there was a set of figures, I wish I would have bought out of the 3 for $10 KB Toys value bin. It would be Swamp Thing, and it would be WWE Hasbro's. That's what I would. Oh my God!
Yeah, well, and it's funny because I actually had a Swamp Thing in my hand at Hills in like 1990, and it was one of those days where mom was in a hurry, and she's like, "Hurry up and pick something!" And so I was like, "All right, okay." So I up and down the aisle, up and down. Like, what do I do? What do I do? And I said, "You know what? I don't like any of these toys. I'm going to leave with nothing." I didn't get anything because I really didn't want the Swamp Thing, and I really didn't want the Crash Test Dummy toys. And so I ended up made the decision not to get anything at all. And I probably the Swamp Thing toy would have been fun. It was the one with like the his arm turned into an empty, like a hollow tree trunk covered with moss. Mm-hmm. And it was like a grapple hook thing.
I think those Swamp Thing toys are pretty expensive because they weren't a real big hit. So there wasn't a lot of them produced. Yeah. I remember looking at a guide for whatever year they came out. Might have been 92.
Yeah, something like that.
91, 92.
There was a cartoon for it.
Yeah, they had Kenner would, and I'm sure all the toy manufacturers did this, at like the New York Toy Fair. They'd give out a promotional catalog to retailers that said, hey, look, here's what's coming up for the year 1991, 1992, when it'd have your Dark Knight collections and your Swamp Things, whatever else Kenner was producing. And I saw that, and I was like, holy cow, there was more Swamp Thing toys than I really thought that there actually were. Remember there was glow in the dark one. They had vehicles and stuff like that.
Weren't they like biological kind of vehicles?
Yeah, I think so.
They were like swampified, or they were just ramshackle type things. Yeah.
Yeah.
The villains. It's Arcane. Arcane was the main guy.
Yes. Yep. Arcane. Yeah.
remember that really bad Swamp Thing 2? Return of Swamp Thing? And that Arcane guy turned into like that giant head. And he had a giant,
Anton Arcane.
And he goes, he turned into like this octopi type thing, and he just looked, and Dick Durock as Swamp Thing reprised his as Swamp. And
well, here's a tie into Swamp Thing. Today is Adrian Barbeau's 76th birthday, so there you go.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Then you got replaced by Heather Locklear, you know, later on, and Adrian Barbeau. Well, now let me get this straight. Was she in Back to School? Wasn't she Thornton Mellon's soon to be ex-wife?
Oh, you know what? She was.
Remember Robert Picardo was Giorgio?
I did not know that. I guess I did not realize Robert Picardo was Giorgio.
Yeah, he's great. He's in everything. He was the cowboy in Inner Space. If I ever get to meet Robert Picardo, I'm going to bring up those movies. Because probably nobody mentions them.
Wow, I guess I would think you would bring up the Burbs.
When he was Giorgio.
Yeah.
Is your Giorgio in the rumpus room? How classy, huh?
did you see yesterday when I sent you guys that picture of the Rodney Dangerfield No Respect board game?
Yes. It was awesome. That's one thing I would like to get some of those older games before. Those end up getting graded and put in some stupid clamshell. I would like to get some of the older board games. One of them I'd like to get is the Mr. T A-Team board game. And this is a relatively cheap. You can get it for like $20 or something if it's in good shape. But like Jody got me the Knight Rider one, and I was able to go on eBay and get the remaining pieces for cheap because it was missing a couple cars.
Oh, it was missing some pieces?
Not many though. There's like I think there's like two villain cars and some extra cards or something. And it's in great shape. I mean, we just played it like I don't know it was a holiday, but it's a fun game, you know. So it's like I like those older games like that, you know, because you just can't, that's not like they reprint them or anything, and that's a whole separate podcast. And so, I mean, there was like a lot of stuff that, you know, was around when we were kids, but you and I didn't know about it because if you didn't see it at the store, it wasn't in stock, you had no idea it existed.
Well, and that was kind of cool, being a kid, because you didn't know what was coming out.
It was a mystique.
Until you got to the store or you looked at the back of the card.
Right.
That was the only way you knew things were coming out. I think like you'd get a heads up in like if you bought WWF magazine, you knew what. Oh wow, look at this! There's going to be a Macho King Hasbro coming out. But for the most part, everything was always a surprise. And some of the toys, and I believe the Dark Knight collection was like this. If you bought a vehicle, you received a booklet inside, and it told you everything that was going to be in that line.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I had the Secret Wars comics pulled up on the computer here, and I've got two copies of Secret Wars number 8. It's for the black suit. They're both in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. And I've got another, I think I only lack like 3 issues of the original Secret Wars run, and one of them is autographed inside by, who was the artist on this one? Gosh, I'd have to go.
Was it, what, didn't Mike Zeck do
Mike
the Zeck, art?
Mike Zeck autographed the inside You flip it open, and then that first page is autographed by Mike Zeck.
Is that a Secret Wars number 8?
Yes.
Is there a barcode in the corner or a picture?
I'd have to look, Jason. I think I got one from Herb when I worked there in 2000 mm-hmm. out of the 50-cent bin.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I snagged that.
Hey, do you still have a DC Comics Presents number 47, Superman versus He-Man?
Gosh. I have one, but it's not the original press. It came with the 2-pack from Mattel.
See, I'm pretty sure you've got the original one somewhere, because I know
I've got one where Superman is going up against Spider-Man, but that's like a Treasury edition or something.
Yeah. No, you had one. I remember you buying it at Herb's for $1 or $2.
Yeah, I've still got it. Anything I had from Herb's, I still have.
That's a big book, because that's He-Man's first appearance in comics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The reason I asked you about the barcode is the barcode's going to be a newsstand edition.
Right.
And the newsstands, the big thing with some of these collectors now is they're going after the newsstands because, in theory, I think they said once the direct market really started and it got the more towards the 90s and out of the fewer and fewer newsstands, like Amazing Spider-Man 361, they think that only 3% of the entire print run was a newsstand edition. So obviously it's a lower print count with the barcode in it. Plus, on newsstands, a lot of the copies were thumbed through or bent over the rack or whatever, so it's hard to find them in nice shape. And with newsstands, everything was fully returnable. So those books, when they were a month old or 2 months old or whenever the retailer pulled them off the rack, were just destroyed. So there's fewer newsstand copies around. So typically the newsstand books are going to run you a multiple of whatever a direct edition copy would be.
I see, and I was looking on my, I have the app.
Yeah.
And I was hoping they'd be on my list, but I think I have to rebuild it because my original list did not get carried over when I got it. Because then I would have been able to tell you exactly what I had.
Yeah, and you might have actually entered it in as just like, oh, Secret Wars number 8. Okay. And didn't even think to look to see if it was a newsstand edition.
Correct, yes. Was... I know one's direct print or whatever they call it when it just has the...
Yeah, direct, yeah.
I had Jody explain it to me once before. I go, hey, why is it when you'd get... Remember how they used to have those bargain packs or whatever, and they'd always have the... Yeah, there's no barcode.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I believe the Secret War stuff I have, one is direct edition, the other one is newsstand. I know that. And I got those Secret Wars comics for cheap out of a 50-cent bin at the comic shop I used to go. That was in, like, 2012, and I can't believe it's been by that fast. But both the ones, the number 8s I have.
Yeah, and before they started putting the image in the box, direct editions always had a black line from opposite corner to opposite corner through them. That's how you could determine that they were direct market. So the earlier in the 80s you go, in the late 70s, when they first started becoming comic shops, direct editions are actually more rare than newsstands because newsstands were plentiful. That's where everybody bought their comics.
Yeah, right.
And comic book shops were still kind of a niche market. So if you have an earlier 80s comic with a line through it, your direct edition is actually a lower print run than your newsstand would be because basically everybody, the publishers wanted all their stuff in newsstands. That's where they were going to sell them.
Yeah.
And comic book stores were still a very small percentage of the overall market.
Right.
But the further you got along into newsstands disappearing and more comic shops opening, especially in the 90s when the boom happened, the newsstands actually become more rare based on print run.
Yeah, I really liked the art that they had back in the mid-80s and late-80s with some of the art was kind of like, I'm trying to remember because I think like the black, remember that issue of Amazing Spider-Man where Peter, it's like the Secret Wars have already happened, they're back home, he's stuck with the black suit and he wakes up in the bed and the suit puts itself on. Like it just.
That's Amazing Spider-Man 252.
Right, and I'm looking at it right now. And I was looking to see who Ron Friends was mm-hmm. the artist, and I liked a lot of that art style because, again, it really brought out the emotions in the character.
Yeah, and I mean there are some really good artists out there nowadays, and it's a different feel.
Yeah.
But there's some really, really good artists out there. I think for the most part, the art nowadays, as opposed to the 90s, it seemed like the 90s, there was a lot of bad art in some comics.
Big time.
Like, there was some bad art, and I think now it's more consistent. There was also a lot of titles in the 90s. I think they were just throwing books out to throw books out.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter. Everybody was buying 5 copies of it to speculate. That's a little bit. There's really not. I mean, you take a top-selling comic now, and probably a top-selling book now is, you know, Batman sells 100,000 copies.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know who I liked? Speaking of modern artists, I liked that Freddie Williams II, and they did the He-Man Thundercats crossover 16.
Yeah.
I can't believe it, Jason. It's been 5 years since I got the books.
Yeah.
And I wish they would have kept the run going. Very short-lived. It's only 6 issues. And I didn't really get into the story a whole lot, but because I was so dazzled by the artwork and the coloring. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just, it has this 70s, 19, it's like 1970s Ralph Bakshi mixed with vibrant HD kind of art. And it just has this vintage feel, but it's got such a vibrancy to it that makes it unique, but it's still amazing. And I just really, I really dug the artwork, but I also have to have a good story too. And
yeah,
because in my opinion, they have to go hand in hand for me to really like a book.
Oh, for sure.
And you know, a lot of people are like, I just love the artwork. It's like, yeah, well, guess what? There's lots of great artwork out there, but what stories stick with you? And I gotta say that not many modern ones do, because there's so many different types of comics to buy and pick from that it just all gets lost in the wash. And
there are a lot, and I mean there's so many. I mean, half of DC's is the big joke is it's all Batman, which is pretty much true.
Yeah.
But you look at Marvel, and it seems like half of Marvel's line is an X book. There's so many X's.
Right.
And I think before, that's not even talking about your independent publisher, which aren't so independent like Boom and IDW, Dark Horse, those guys. But before, when it was feasible, like, you could buy every book if you want. Now, you better have like a super good job if you wanted to buy first of all, I don't think you could buy every book because there's so many from everybody getting produced, but I mean, the books are $4 and $5 and $6 a piece.
I quit because it was getting to the point to where, I got a great job and I can swing it. But I, you know, for someone like me, I have other hobbies. But it just, I was like, you know what? This is getting a bit much. And here's the biggest reason I stopped. I didn't like the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the worst stories that I had encountered was the Superman stuff. It was terrible. And he reveals his identity to the world. Like, they couldn't figure it out before.
So you were reading the Bendis Superman.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, Bendis is great. Bendis is awesome. And I was liking the Bendis stuff. But then
very big letdown.
Huge. And that killed it for me.
So they were coming off when Bendis relaunched Superman in Action. It's a huge deal.
Right.
It's huge. Yeah, it's like huge free agent signing. He always going to be exclusive. He's going to take over Superman. Well, Dan Jurgens was writing Action Comics. And Dan Jurgens, for like my age, is the Superman writer. I mean, he did Superman in the 90s. He did the whole, you know, Death of Superman. When I see Dan Jurgens draw Superman and when I have him write Superman, that's pretty much what I think of. I know Byrne does a great Superman, draws a great Superman.
Yeah, awesome.
Garcia Lopez draws a great Superman. But Jurgens, like, I really like his Superman. I like his writing.
Yeah.
But he was writing Action, and Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason were writing Superman, the just regular Superman title. And that was the one that introduced out after the New 52. It introduced Jonathan Kent. Lois and Clark had a son, Jonathan Kent. And, you know, obviously he had abilities. And it was a really, really, really good run. The whole thing was really, really good. But you sign Bendis, and what he wants to write Superman. What are you going to do? You're going to move Juergens off the book. You're going to move Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason off them. Which was unfortunate because they were both really good writers. There's not much that Pete Tomasi has written that I haven't enjoyed, and the same thing with Dan Juergens. There's not a lot that he has written that I haven't enjoyed. The Nightwing run went into like a total, oh my God, he was shot and he lost his memory and he was changed his name and it was just terrible. And then Juergens got on the book and really pulled the nose up and straightened it out, and you're like, oh, well, I guess I can buy that, how Juergens has really explained it and straightened it out compared to what was going on before. And I liked his Batman Beyond run too. But yeah, that Superman in Action Comics run that Bendis did, it just, oh boy. And like, what do you, when you reveal Superman's identity to the world, where do you go from there?
Nowhere.
Right? You hotshotted it.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got now? What do you got left?
Yeah.
Right? You used up your big trick. What do you got left? Well, I don't know. I'm not on the book anymore.
Yeah, it's like he just totally, he burned out the rest of the dilithium crystals and left the ship derelict in space. Hey, I'm going to go find another one, guys. Transfer me to here.
He's writing Justice League right now.
And
it's been okay. But. Yeah.
See, and that's my problem. And that goes back to what started this whole little subset of the conversation, was that I don't want to pay $60 a month for just okay. And that was my problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually went back. I started at Action Comics 1000 and started going back in issues, just starting with, like, you know, 99, 98, and kept going, right?
And those were Juergens issues, yeah.
Right. And I thought they're pretty good. But it's like, nobody wants those comics. I seem to like all the stuff nobody cares about. Because you can get those for $2 a piece now. You know, you go to like my comic shop or something. And they're not that, mm-hmm. They took on no value at all. Something like Action Comics 1000, you know, you get $15, $16 per issue, you know. And
yeah, and even that, I think you should be able to get for $5 or $6 somewhere. That was a $10 book.
Yeah.
So I think you should be able to get that somewhere. I mean, one thing about Superman, and that one of my Batman and Detective runs are pretty much where I want them to be. If I see Superman books for $1 or less, I buy Superman, Action, Adventure Superman, whatever it is, because I'm trying to fill that out. Superman has no, until you get back into the Silver Age, there aren't any really big, expensive issues for Superman.
Right.
He doesn't have like great rogues gallery.
No.
Like Batman does. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
no, where there's always
a new character being introduced, or Spider-Man, there's always a new character being introduced. Superman just, like, I mean, you get Bronze Age Superman books for $1 or less a piece mostly.
Yeah.
Obviously he's got some of the books in the Bronze Age where Neil Adams has done the covers, and those are going to cost you a little bit of money. But for the most part, if it's not Neil Adams on the cover, you're probably not paying that much for the book.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you were talking about new characters they'd introduced, and I remember she's not really new anymore, which is kind of strange, but it's been 5 years, but that Naomi character was introduced.
She's in the Justice League now.
Right, and so Superman had taken her under his wing, tried to at least tell her to kind of like get control of your powers first, and you know, and I think it's great when they bring in a new character like that that can actually do something, and also it just creates an interesting story because she wasn't secure in her powers yet, right?
Yeah,
and I thought that at least it adds some kind of interest to her developing as a character. And the other character I thought was kind of interesting was that she turns into a red mist, and I'm trying to remember her name.
Her name was Red Mist.
Is that what it was? Okay, so
yeah.
Kind of cheesy, but I liked it because she's cheesy. And she tried to choke out Superman. It didn't work. Got close, but
yeah,
he kind of exhaled, and that was it.
Yeah, and Naomi, I read that miniseries, I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't bad, but I ran 6 issues, and then she'll come back. Okay.
Yeah, they just dropped it.
Yeah, and I will say, whatever the guy who's writing Batman right now, James Tynion. Seems like he's got a new character in every issue. We talked a little bit just on here about Punchline being the new thing.
Yeah.
But he's introduced Ghostmaker is a character. He's introduced Miracle Molly's a new character. Yeah, there's a lot of new characters, and at least they're trying. Like, I think a lot of people, writers and creators, don't introduce new characters at Marvel and DC anymore because they want to own those characters. They want to have the rights to them. Instead of having DC or Marvel own them. I mean, and DC and Marvel make millions of dollars off a character, and the creator gets not really much. They get a thank you credit maybe in one of the movies, but they don't get a whole heck of a lot. So it's kind of nice that he's introducing characters into the book, because a lot of people really aren't introducing new characters.
Yeah.
They're taking their idea over to Image or Boom or IDW, where, okay, we'll publish your book, but you own the rights to those. So if it gets optioned for a TV show, that's you who gets, you know, the majority of the money. Whereas DC and Marvel, I mean, look at the CW shows, the MCU movies. I mean, I think Ed Brubaker was just on, and obviously he didn't create Bucky Barnes, okay? But he did introduce the Winter Soldier and the concept of the Winter Soldier in that Captain America run. And doesn't really, I mean, how much money do you think that Winter Soldier movie show generated? Probably quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Captain America and the Winter Soldier, it's a pretty big movie that probably generated some money, moved some extra units, right? And I don't think he got much out of it. So that's why a lot of these creators take their stuff over to the independent. I mean, I'm sure Rob Liefeld's making money hand over fist every time there's a Deadpool pop released. But I think things were maybe structured a little bit differently in the 90s. I think way back, I mean, going back to Siegel and Schuster about creating Superman and getting a $600 check from DC Comics to buy it, and Neil Adams trying to really help those guys out because they were pretty well broke when they were old, to get them some money from DC, and that kind of helped creators and stuff. I mean, get a little bit of money, but you still hear stories of guys creating characters and not seeing a dime from it, and the publishers going like, "That's too bad for you. It's our character."
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. Again, it goes into them treating comics like a business model at this point. Like, the, you know, it's my intellectual property I'm taking with, but it's like, again, it's the money aspect of things that kills the hobbies. And I wish that there was a cushion, you know what I mean, where there's enough for the fans, and if the greedy, you know, Ferengis want to take their cut, that's fine. I wish there was a way to make that possible and everyone's happy.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the publishers, obviously they're a publisher. They want to maximize their bottom line, so they want to print as many as they can, but not have copies sitting all over the place in their warehouses that retailers don't order.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of that, if you're an independent small comic shop, you have to be conservative with your orders because you need to buy these comics ahead of time, and then hope that you sell through on all of them, but you also don't want to go, "Oh, well, geez, I usually sell 20 copies a month of Batman, so I'm going to order 20 for my pulls and 5 for the shelf."
Yeah.
And then, this new character got introduced, and we didn't know that when final order cutoff happened. And you have some guy come in and he buys those 5 copies. It's somebody who isn't on the pull list, but does buy Batman occasionally, and maybe is liking the 3 or 4 issue storyline. "Hey, you got any more Batmans?" No, they're all sold out. And then that person might say, "You know what? They always say you're a week away from not buying comic. If you miss a week, you could be done, because then people realize, I don't really need those anymore, and they never come back." But you don't want to risk ordering 20 copies more above your pull list and being stuck with 20 copies, because now you've got dollars tied up, and that's real money for a lot of these small shops.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't make the books returnable Some of the publishers right. do. I think Image, I think anytime Image launches a number one, I'm pretty sure you get it's returnable. When DC did the new 52 initiative, I can't remember how many issues in that was, but all those books were returnable. So retailers ordered a ton of them.
Yeah.
And then anything they didn't sell, they could return. I think that would go a long way. I think that would generate readership. And I also think just the price of them are just it's too much.
Yeah, yeah.
They are just too expensive. I mean, I really liked when DC was doing $2.99 comics.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of right there, right where I think they could have been. $3. But man, once you start getting $4, then okay, $5, and then it's an extra dollar for cards, so now it's $6.
Yeah.
There's anthology books. DC did a future they paused for 2 months and did this event called Future State through all their books, and I think the Batman books were $8 or $9 a piece.
That's brutal.
And they were thicker. They were more of an 80-page giant whatever.
Yeah, like those old trade paperbacks from the 90s.
Yeah. But still, that's a lot of money to pay for a funny book. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Like my God. I mean, when comics came around, they were supposed to be cheap, disposable entertainment.
Right. They're like a newspaper.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, then throughout the years, they changed to being collectible and all that. And I understand it. But I think people go to the comic shop and they say, I got $20 a week to spend. Right. And if comics are $3 a piece, that means I'm getting 6 books. If comics are $5 a piece, that means I'm getting 4 books. I think they're really hurting themselves by keeping the price up. And they aren't paying the creators anymore. The creators aren't getting paid any more than they were.
They're just all independent contractors.
Yeah, so I think the price of the books now is too high.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, you know, pro wrestlers and, like, WWE, where it's like they don't have any creative control of the characters and the characters at all. And it's kind of reminds me of that, even though it's kind of a different line of work. But I just, you know, you had mentioned long time ago, I heard you on a podcast, on Jody's old podcast, and it was, you guys had talked about how these people were, like, the comic companies would pay these old artists. There was one guy, I don't remember who it was, but they would just pay the guy just to be there, just kind of paying back respect. They'd send him a check is what they would do because of his contributions. It's almost like a Legends contract type thing, but they would just send him money because of, you know, and they'd let him do some short runs every once in a while, or do some cover art or something like that. I don't remember who it was, but it's like, that's a bygone era. I mean, no one ever talks about, you know, really, like, there's no honorary, you know, agreement or anything. That's just gone. And I mean, where do you see comics going in the next 5 years? I mean, in taking into account the streaming on the Disney Plus and the streaming on the DC app, where do you see comics in print going, or comics in general being interesting? Because a lot of people, I would mention, hey, they had a great, in the comics, if you go back to the comics from 20 years, you know, or whatever, I said, this guy came from here, they're like, oh, that's great, and, oh, really? They don't care. They don't care where the source material comes from.
So, I don't think print comics are going anywhere, okay? I also don't think print comics are growing their audience. I think the audience is going to be the same, pretty much. There's not a lot of new readers coming in, and unfortunately, a lot of the guys that do buy comics are 40, 50, 60, 70-year-old dudes. And,
right.
Like, they don't live forever, you know what I mean? Right. So, I don't think that there's a lot of new readership.
Right.
Kids aren't – there are all-ages books out there, but the books are so inaccessible that
right.
It used to be you'd buy a Spider-Man comic – and the first page or two, he'd have thought bubbles above his head of what happened in the previous 2 or 3 issues. And you'd have your little editor's notes down there.
Finger off. Like,
see Amazing Spider-Man 354 for what happened. Right. So you'd have an idea and he'd have his thought balloon and say, right. Oh, this is what happened. Now it's like, okay, you buy Batman 108 and all right, what the heck? Why doesn't Batman have any money anymore? Okay. Like, what's been going on? What's this Joker war?
They would actually tell you what as seen in issue blah blah blah, go pick it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Marvel books, they do like a recap at the beginning. I know the Star Wars books do it and that helps too. But it just seems like they're very inaccessible. And I know, like, Stan Lee always used to say, you know, it's somebody's comic's their first comic, right? Like, doesn't matter what issue it is. So you got to kind of to ease them into it and, like, give them an idea so they come back and they buy that next comic. But it's funny because you think of how many people go and see The Avengers Endgame, right? What, that billion-dollar movie. Or even, we won't even do an Avengers Endgame. We'll do Aquaman, right?
Yeah.
Look how much money Aquaman.
It's freaking awesome.
Is a great movie, right? People loved it. Loved Aquaman. Jason Momoa, oh my God. He's so great. Loved Aquaman. Now, the top-selling book of last month was Batman 108, okay? That book sold 200,000 copies. The top-selling book in all of comics sold 200,000 copies. Aquaman doesn't even have a book because he couldn't sell enough copy to justify keeping a series.
Yeah.
But his movie made... Did that movie make $1 billion?
I think so. And I can tell you from the music side is that the soundtrack, the movie score, the orchestral aspects of the film, mm-hmm. Was out of print for 3 months on Amazon.
Yeah. And so that's or where...
Sold out, I should say.
The people that watch the movies don't, for the most part, buy the books. They don't care. They don't need to know the backstory. they want to be entertained for the 2 or 3 hours,
the visual
whatever
aspects,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's most people. Like, most people. there aren't a lot of comic readers out.
Right.
I mean, there just aren't, and the audience keeps dwindling, but the fools that keep it afloat, like me, are the ones that go to the shop every Wednesday and they buy their books. And then, you know, you probably, geez, you idiot, if you waited a year, you'd probably find it in a dollar bin instead of paying $4 the day it came out. But that's what we've been trained to do, and that's what we continue to do. And I think as long as, like, people like me are still there, the comics will be around. I know some people like trades. There's been talk that monthly books will go away and it'll just be trades that are sold every 4 or 6 months. I don't know if I see that happening either. But it's almost like they're not going to stop making the movie. Okay. The movies just make too much money, but they need something that's gives them access to an audience to go watch the movie. Like, they just need that property there. They need that original source material, even though they don't necessarily pull from it all the time. They need that access for fans. And I don't think, you know, wasn't it 10 years ago they said, oh, print comics are done, it's going to be all digital.
Yeah, right.
And it hasn't really affected, like, sales at all. I think the thing that affects sales is the price of them, for one thing. And there's not, like, I don't know, it's just different. Like, people don't want comics anymore. Like, they don't, I don't know if it's they don't have the attention span.
That's part, I think that's a big part of it.
You know, like, everything is instant now. So why am I going to buy, over the course of 6 months, a story, one little piece of that story every month for 6 months? Why am I going to do that? Because people want the whole thing right now. I mean, that's just the way everything is. It's a very on-demand society.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch, you know, Netflix drops a series and you watch all 13 episodes in 2 days. because that's just the way it is now. We get our news instantly. Like, anything we want to know, we get it instantly. So there's no attention span to follow a comic
no.
in little pieces each month at a, you know, you could go to the movies for $10, or you could buy and get a whole story, or you could buy this one comic book for $5 and then spend the next 6 or 7 or 8 months chasing it and hope it comes out on time. I mean, look at Doomsday Clock. Doomsday Clock was a 12-issue series. Would it take 2 years to come out because of all the delays?
Right.
Half the time, I couldn't even remember what was going on in between issues because it's been 3 months.
Yeah.
On Doomsday Clock. Yeah, because you're
like, you know, as an adult, your mind is cluttered with everything else, and it's like...
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why a lot of people do wait for trades instead of buying the monthly book. Well, I'll just wait for volume 2 of the trade because at least I know I'm getting 6 to 8 issues of a story.
Yeah.
So it's just, and I guess I don't blame people. If I can go and watch Avengers and pretty much get the whole story in one shot, that's pretty good. You know,
What's funny you bring that up is like I have a hardcover of, it's actually a Marvel Comics published hardcover of Treasure Island.
Uh-huh.
And I read the whole freaking thing in one shot, right? And it's pretty thick. And I was thinking, you know what? If I had to read the traditional print of this novel, it'd be super thick, right? But because they have all the visual that explains what's going on in addition to the, you know, what is penciled in or what the script is in there and the little bubbles, it's like it cuts down your reading time in just a mere fraction of what it would be if you had to read the traditional hardcover book or the novel, and because all the visuals right there, you know. And I was like, wow, this comic's okay. I guess the art's all right, but if you're in a time crunch, I would probably suggest reading the comic instead of the novel. I just figured I'd throw that in there because I thought it was an interesting type of comic to have published. And so, I mean, the thing is like one segue I wanted to add into this was the fact that there's several 80s toy lines that ended up as miniseries and comic books. You had Mask, Masters Universe, which was All-Star Comics, right? Star Comics. It was Star.
That was Star Comics.
That was a subset of Marvel. You have.
Yeah, that was like the kids line. That was your Care Bears. I think Peter Porker.
Right.
Spider-Ham. Wasn't that a Star Comic?
Who's that kid with the jet? They wore the white hair. He had those jets on.
I don't know.
Jody knew his name, and it like Joey's a friend of ours, by the way. Those of you who don't know who Jody is, he's been on the show. Check the archives. But the kid had these boots on, and I always wanted to slap the kid in the face when I was a kid because I'm like, you think you're so great with your stupid rocket boots? But
well, I mean, he had rocket boots. I think I was pretty great.
Right? Yeah. And I don't know why there was like a lot of kids. I was kind of a grouch kid, so.
You don't say.
You don't. That was terrible. I didn't like those Precious Ones kids. They angered me.
Precious Moments?
Precious Moments, yeah. I'd see them in the store, and I never told anybody, but I think Mom knew, but I was like.
Oh, I knew you didn't like them either.
But yeah, it's, I mean, there was several.
Miserable. You were a miserable child.
I had a substitute teacher in fourth grade come up to me and say, "You're the most negative person I've seen in my life." This is a grown man.
In fourth grade. You were the most.
Yes.
You were the. So you, out of this guy's life, who's 40, 45 years old, and you're a fourth grader.
Yes.
You were the most negative person he'd ever encountered.
He came over to me. He pulled me aside. And there's a table in the back. He goes, he told me that. Just hush tones. I was like, you know what? That's quite an accomplishment. If I had a sash, I would wear it. You know? And it didn't bother me. I think it's funny now, but because I try to be kind of positive. I'm more realistic. But it was like, what's that?
You were just always in a bad mood. You always had a chip on your shoulder.
That's why they called me Chip.
Always.
Yeah. Because I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I'm like that kid from Superman 4, Jeremy. It was just Superman would have said yes.
I think he was more positive than you.
Yeah, right. I can't hear you. Speak into the microphone. Okay, Mr. Warfield. But anyway, what I was going to say about, they had like the Centurions comics, Mask, which mm-hmm. is Mobile Armored Strike Command for people not getting it confused with the
Jim Carrey. Yeah, now Mask was a DC book. That was published
right, but I'm
by
just
DC.
Saying collectively, right, mm-hmm. just in collectively as the, you had the Visionaries, which is, I think, lasted for 4 issues or something like that. Also, the Transformers, they had several miniseries.
Yeah, now Transformers, that was a Marvel book.
Yep, and I have the crossover with G.I. Joe and the Transformers, yeah. And surprisingly, that's a very depressing miniseries.
They blew up Bumblebee.
No, but then there's a woman that dies. I think Duke had a thing for this woman in that comic, and she, I don't know if she committed suicide, or she, mm-hmm. I don't know what happened, but the whole series ended on this sour note, like if you watch Good Morning Vietnam, where you're like, oh man, this mm-hmm. movie's really funny, and it ends on this, it just turns into a sucky movie.
Yeah.
And also like Slapshot, same thing. It's all depressing towards the end. And then, or actually probably halfway through. But my point is that there was a lot of toy-related comic books that were just meant to help bolster the toys, or the show, I guess. And because usually the toys were built to help promote the show, and so comic books were just another avenue for that, which obviously a lot of people, collectors are starting to notice their value because they're connected to the toys. And
And the other thing with those books is any of your Star Comics or any of your 80s toy properties, they were for kids, so they weren't well taken care
right,
of.
Right, mine were shot, man.
So to find those books in a high grade, they're going to demand a premium. Things, and people are jumping all over anything. Thundercats
mm-hmm.
is starting to be a big book. Mask, anything. G.I. Joe has been a pretty well-priced run for quite a while now. And like I told you earlier, that DC Comics Presents with Superman and He-Man in it, that being He-Man's first appearance in the comics, that book has shot up astronomically. So anything 80s, anything like kid-related 80s books, any of those Star Comics, those are really starting to heat up quite a bit because people bought them for their kids. Their kids rolled them up and put them in their pocket or read them 400 times and had the covers fall off or colored in them or wrote their name in them. So to find those books in high grade, they really are pretty highly priced now.
Well, you know what's funny is like I'm actually flipping through the IDW Mass comics and the covers look amazing, and they're actually keeping the same look of the toys. I'm like, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, IDW and some of the writers, like, they screwed up Knight Rider, they screwed up Airwolf, and I just, but it's like the original series, I got those in 50 cent bins, like I said, back in 2012, and now they're worth, I saw a Pixel Dan video, and for people who aren't familiar, Pixel Dan is a toy collector guy. He gets a lot of free review samples from like Mattel and all, so he's got his whole basement's full of review samples. He goes to like,
if you had a basement, it would be full of toys. Your house is full of toys.
Well, this room is not my house. There's storage though. There's deep storage.
What about your bedroom?
Okay, that's full of but those are strictly 80s toys, people. Well, and okay, never mind.
There's only 80s toys are allowed in the bedroom.
It must be some subconscious thing. I don't know.
No. If it didn't come from the 80s, it's not coming in here.
Well, I have the room. It's a very large estate, and I decided I'm going to fill it full of toys.
Well, might as well.
I sound like Higgins or something. Yes, this is the Robin Masters estate. But no, I think I'm going to bow out from... I was telling you this on the phone the other day. I'm pretty much bowing out of the vintage toy stuff for a while. And even the stuff I can't get that's new that I want, I'm bowing out trying to go get it because it's just mm-hmm. stupid right now. And I think... But like Justice Curry, he's another YouTube guy. I like his stuff. He said that the bubble's going to burst, probably in a couple of years. The Masters thing's going to... The bubble's going to burst, and people are going to get what they want, and then, you know, and this whole thing start when Masters started because Sony was going to make a film. Well, guess what? It's nowhere. They even had a guy cast to play He-Man and Prince Adam. They dropped him because the movie's going nowhere.
Yeah. Well, now things are heating up again, because did you watch the trailer for the new series?
Well, they've got the cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch that new trailer yet?
I may have. I'd have to go see which one it is.
You would remember if you watched.
Yeah, I think I saw like a brief snippet at like from 2 years ago when Kevin Smith was at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, this was his series. It just came out the other day.
Oh, then I did not see it. No. No.
Bonnie Tyler holding out for a hero. That's the theme song. You think I'm making it up?
Don't you? No. I think it's funny because you're totally.
Why? Because it makes you think of Harry Crumb?
Yes. That's awesome.
Driving that truck with the stairs on it.
It's at the airport.
Yeah.
Who's the red haired guy? I'm looking for Elliot Dreisen. I'm looking for Elliot Dreisen.
Oh yeah. Yeah, didn't that guy end up being a perv?
Yeah, he's in prison. Yeah, he's a pedophile.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, yeah. Man.
He always looked creepy in the movies, too. There's always something about that guy. And, like, if you watch, like, he was, like, this perverted bird watcher, like, on Beetlejuice. And he was kind of a creepy dude. He always had that really nasty smile. Like, get away from me with that mustache.
Yeah.
But
I thought the trailer looked pretty good for it, actually. I wish you'd watched it before. Before we got
I didn't
on
even know what was out. I mean, I haven't been following it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that show comes out in July. But yeah, I thought it looked pretty cool.
Now there's two shows. There's an anime style one. And like, so does Kevin Smith have the anime style one?
I don't know. This is the Kevin Smith one. I don't think it looked overly anime to me. I thought it looked a lot like the 2000 series.
And so it takes place after the end of the original.
Yes. So I thought it looked a lot more like the 2000X series. But yeah, it picks up where, you know, the old one left off. But I thought it looked pretty good.
Which is funny because the original cartoon did not have a linear storyline by any means.
No, God, no.
And they wouldn't even let the writers even expand on a character. You know?
And I mean, obviously, I think we've talked about the voice cast before with I know Mark Hamill. I'm pretty sure he's doing Skeletor.
Yeah, see, I don't have Netflix. I got rid of Netflix because I got sick of it. I don't know. So I, like, I see it now. Yeah, it does look like the Mike Young Productions.
Yeah.
The MYP, they call it. But, I mean, that's, it looks cool. I like that because it kind of, I like, it looks like the, just the visual appeal is there. And He-Man's not a wuss. And that's cool. I'll have to go check this out. But
yeah, when we get done, you should go watch
Yeah,
that,
I will. Yeah, because it's, now they've got the toy line. Mm-hmm. That, like, I know Scott Nightwick was saying that it's not going to be a massive deal where it's going to go on forever or go on for several years.
And I saw size comparisons of the figures compared to the Origins figures.
Yeah.
And they're very big. They're very good size. They're more, I would say they're more in line with the size of the McFarlane figs than they are the Origin figs.
Right.
So maybe more like the 2000.
Well, they're supposed to be 7-inch, I believe, in scale. And I just dread it, Jason, because I'm just like, you know what? Scalpers line up, you know, and hopefully they'll make enough where anybody can get them, I guess. I don't know, but you already know how this is going to play out.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I was listening to somebody that was in the industry, and they honestly, this is what they said. They said scalpers make up only 10% of the market.
Well, then start making more toys then, people.
Right. So, okay, if they only make up 10% of the market, it means you're still not making enough toys.
Right. You can't blame COVID on that. You're just, you know, at this point, come on, start cranking. You know, you got McDonald's Walmart, making cheeseburgers and frying French fries.
Yeah.
What's your excuse, you know?
Our Walmart has had no new McFarlane's 2 months.
See, and that's the thing is, we slowed down here on those, but then as of just a month ago, we've had a steady supply.
Yeah. Well, and then they haven't had, they've had a He-Man's and Skeletors. That's it. And that's going on.
Right.
That's going on 6 months.
Yeah.
Same with our Target. They've had He-Man and Skeletor.
Right.
That's it. Nothing else. Wrestlers, same thing. Not much else. Like, every once in a while, you'll get a case in, and that case is gone in a day.
Yeah.
Like, just a day. And, like, not everybody's a loser adult toy collector like you and me. Some of these people actually buy them what they're for, you know, and that's for kids to play with them.
Yep.
Not for 40-year-old guys to admire them on a shelf or just stick them in a box, never to be seen again.
Right.
But the, I mean, God, like, you gotta feel bad for your kid if your kid wants to get them.
Yeah, I know. I went through that already with the WWE guys.
Oh man, so Christmas happened, and you know, my dad got me He-Man and got me Skeletor, and I got a Battle Cat, and oh, look at the back of the box. It says there's gonna be Stratos, one of them. I can't remember who was in the first Beastman, and Tila, and Evelyn. Oh, I can't wait to get those. And every time you go to the store every week with your mom and dad to get groceries, and you hustle over to the toy section, you get there, and oh, He-Man and Skeletor and Battle Cat.
Yeah.
It's so disappointing. And kids, there's only, like, I found this with my girls. They are, when they're into something, they're super into something, but then it changes very quickly and they're not into that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they don't, I think, like, you and me, we were into, like, Batman guys for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, years, right?
Right.
And I don't know if it's because there's so many different things, but if you don't have toys to keep giving to the kid or keep buying to build his, you know, his wrestling federation he's got, or his He-Man collection, or his Transformers, or whatever it is, the kid's going to lose interest. Well, geez, how many adventures can I have with He-Man and Skeletor without getting some new guys into the mix?
Well, yeah, and like when they came out with those minifigs here a few months ago, those literally were on those end boxes for a week. And
I told you that we had a floor display in them, and in 2 days they were gone.
Yeah, that's what happened. We had a Target and at the Richland Target, because there's two Targets here, and the Kennewick one never got them, so that I can see, because they just promptly got rid of the display. And there's something seriously wrong with the logistics at this point. You can't blame COVID on anything at this point, because everyone's full open for business. Everyone's at work. So it's, I don't know, man. Like you said, whatever reason is, they're leaving money on the table. And you can argue that toys are only a small percent of the pie, but they're still part of the pie. And if you, why not make money if you can do it?
Yeah.
And that it actually drives customers to your store. Especially right now, since these 40-year-old loser collectors, like you said, they're a bunch of Ferengi. Mm-hmm. Those are people that are constantly going in. And I love the picture you sent me of a guy with Crocs on and sweatpants and.
Oh yeah, that action figure.
Oh, it's hilarious. He's got
Was it supposed to be like a G.I. Joe?
Yeah,
it was a G.I. Joe, right?
Yeah.
Would he have a laptop with like eBay on it or something, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely accurate to a T.
And I mean, I can't tell you how many times, because whenever Kelsey goes to the store, she looks for me every time. And she goes, oh, I had to wait because some guy was going through all the pegs all the time.
Because, you know, you always had the long-running Hot Wheels guy.
Those guys are still around.
They still are.
Yeah,
they're not going anywhere, man. Around. That's been like a decades thing.
Yeah. No, those guys still come in and go through them for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's funny because you know, we're making fun of these guys going through the pegs and stuff, and
yeah, we're making an observation.
we're those guys going through the pegs too.
Yeah, I'm semi-retired at this point.
No, I got my routine. I get done with the gym at night, and then I go, well, I guess I'll go over to Walmart.
Because this is something we do. I mean, we have kids, and you know, it's just kind of just continued, you know, and. I just think I like some of the larger diecast cars, like the A-Team stuff. They're doing some more of the obscure, like, you know, supporting vehicles. Like Colonel Decker's car off the A-Team, you know, and that kind of thing that I think is cool. And those cheapskate Hot Wheels guys go past that stuff because it's $20 a car. Well, guess what? It's 10 times cooler than your stupid Hot Wheels car. So, there you go. But, at any rate. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. We're cranking up the time here, but this is great, and I want to do this again. This is cool, and we've just scratched the surface, and it's been great to kind of get caught up with you on the comic book industry, where it's at, the habits, the selling, and the, you know, kind of where the business is going, and you're very well connected into that, and I've given you props before on the show for being my hookup for a lot of the, kind of like what's on that side of the the country with toys on the shelf and everything, and the updates that you send me. So that's appreciated. I think it's been great because, like I said, it's, you know, we both kind of hinted that it was like 6 years since we've talked together on a podcast. So it's a lot of fun. So yeah, this is great. And you know, guys, I'll share if Jason gets me more updates as things go on. We'll be sure to.
Yeah, I just have to get a weekend where somebody doesn't have a tournament or a game or something out of town where I can do it again. So,
right. Well, and I always like, I look forward to hearing, like, you always tell me kind of like things you've seen, like when you go far, you know, a long distance to another target or something.
Well, I'd say the only advantage to these having to run these kids all over the Northeast is you do get to visit different stores, different comic shops. That's a positive to, you know, you get the opportunity to watch the kid have fun and do something that they really enjoy. But hey, while I'm here, might as well see if there's a comic shop around. So that's always fun. I don't think they think it's so much fun after they've you know, done whatever particular activity they've done all day and are hot and sweaty and tired and just want to go back to the hotel or whatever, and I drag them to a comic shop and I dig through long boxes. I don't think they think that's the best thing, but I have a pretty good time doing it. So.
Yeah, you and I had our stint with that the freaking Department of Motor Vehicles, so.
Oh my gosh.
Alright, cool. Well, hey, Jason, is there anything else you wanted to add, or?
No, I don't think so. Cool.
It's awesome having you on here, and yeah, everybody, if you want to check us out, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. I don't like Facebook, but we're on there. I'm going to get caught up on the episodes. I'm a little behind. I've had some personal priorities and just things going on, but I'll get caught up on those. Yeah, check us out. We're at KickCar83 on Twitter. You know, we got the Case in Point Podcast Facebook page. We're on Instagram, so check out Case in Point on Instagram. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Check out McSauce Podcast. Check out a Fireside Chat, Ryan McCormick, The Element of Surprise. Hope this finds you well. They're all great podcasts. Check them out. And yeah, we're going to call this episode Zero in honor of the QVC Dan Jurgens Superman Zero. I think that would be appropriate.
Oh my God.
So yeah, folks, you guys have a great one, and we'll catch you next time.